Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It should be a glorious day here in Middle Tennessee. I think we may reach 80 degrees today, so enjoy it if you get a chance to get out at some point. This is social distancing show number 6 for us. I'm Darren McFarland here representing the south side of town down here in Rutherford County. Willie Donick is over on the east side of town in East Nashville. Chase McCabe.
East side checking in.
Yeah, there you go. East Chase McCabe representing the west side out in Bellevue.
West side checking in.
Elijah Campbell back at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike holding down the fort at our Wholesale Link Game Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. In fact, last couple nights it sounds like he's had some rumbling on in his house. Some foot soldiers going up and down the hallway. Guys, there's been some reports of more ghosts. As Elijah is spending more time at home, I don't know if they're ticked off that you and your roommates are at home a lot more, but they don't seem to be happy from the reports I'm getting.
They've certainly left their guard down. It actually happens while I'm here. I was told that by my roommate, my brother, they were sitting downstairs doing homework for school because all their stuff's online, that they could hear running upstairs. And obviously, I'm not there. I'm here. It is during the hours of 10 and 2, so it's getting a little freaky.
So they need their space, is what you're saying. They're protesting because usually you guys are out of the house at this time, right?
Oh, yeah.
What I'm hearing?
It must have figured me out. It knows when I'm out, so it knows when to do its exercise in my room, apparently.
Okay. But still, no. It was all around you playing video games, but this is more. A little bit more detailed as we sit here today, right?
Mm-hmm. They said, quote, it sounded like someone was running from Lucas's room to your room.
Yikes.
It was creepy.
Yeah, no thanks.
They told me that while we were playing board games the other night at like 9 p.m. and did not want to go upstairs to go to bed. I was like, I want to wait a little bit
I am out on that. Guys, I have tweeted out, I have pulled a bobblehead off one of the bookshelves. I've tweeted it out. We're starting to get some responses. Who am I? I don't know if you guys have had a chance to look at it, although Chase has weighed in and guessed George Plaster. I'm not going to say yay or nay. I will tell you that Don Mattingly has been guessed. Skeeter Barnes has been guessed. We're getting some good guesses, and I'll just leave it at that. I'm just going to let people guess for a bit and see if we can't get a winner.
This one does not have the giveaway. But it does have the original Sounds uniform, so it would suggest that it's an older sound, although the team does wear the throwback uniform, so it would not be out of the realm that it could be a more modern sound.
It is tougher these days because there are so many times that, like you said, that everybody is more than willing to put on the throwbacks. So, you know, and you could have that represented in a bobblehead night. So it's a little bit tougher. Used to be like the dead giveaway. You could, you know, figure out an era just by the uniform, but not so much these days because this may be a very newer bobblehead that, you know, they just happen to have the throwbacks on. So just keep those guesses coming in. We'll see if anybody can nail this. This one's a little bit tougher. That's why I picked it out. Speaking of, Major League Baseball season would be beginning today. A little bit sad.
Well, so happy opening day. Let's wish everybody a bittersweet
really happy
opening day.
Is it really happy?
No,
really.
But we can dream. We can dream how much we love baseball. I am wearing a shirt. Well, I can't. It's too easy. So I can't do the Darren McFarland T-shirt game because it would be way too easy to name the player on my shirt. But I am wearing a Mets themed shirt with one of my favorite players on there.
I have a baseball themed shirt on as well that I wanted to play the game again today, but I just haven't had time to do the blurry pictures yet. But it's a tougher one. It is definitely a tougher one. Although yesterday was pretty tough, but this one is this is the old number one when it comes to a baseball theme for today. But eventually somebody would get it. But I'm just going to leave it at that because okay. Maybe I'll get around.
Well, you're going to have to put it. We're going to need a picture.
We'll need to do something. We'll need to do something. Speaking of that, we will have on Kirk Casale, Cincinnati Reds catcher, to kick off the second hour of the program. Baseball is trying to throw out some things to see how many games they can get in. And the latest round of 7-inning doubleheaders, like they do, ironically, like they do in AAA when the Sounds have doubleheaders, that's what they do. I don't see that at the major league level. I know they're trying to cram in as much as they can and figure out the way to play the most games possible, but is 7-inning doubleheaders the best route to go for Major League Baseball?
I would prefer them not do that.
I would say no. But what's interesting is, and I've seen a lot of articles along these lines. I saw Jason Stark with a good article. But everybody's just sitting around floating ideas out there, right? Just because you have to be ready for all kinds of different things depending on when you start. But the line that jumped out at me from Jason's article is anybody, he had a baseball person say, anybody that's telling you that they have a track or they have it tracked on when they could start the season is lying. So they just don't know when they're going to be able to start.
Right.
So I would rather just play the games from the schedule forward, maybe tweak it a little bit. That's what Jason suggested people would say. Just try to, you would pick up the schedule from where it is, play those games, and then maybe tweak it just so that everybody is scheduled to play the same amount of games.
I just think I understand they want to get as, and the players want to earn as much money. I get it. Everybody wants to do that. Nobody wants to be canceling anything. Okay. There's a lot of money being lost in a lot of different places, not just sports, but this is just the harsh reality that we're in. I mean, Major League Baseball at some point is going to have to grasp, but there's no way, in my opinion, they're getting in 162 games this season. There's just no way. I don't care what system you come up with unless you're just planning on playing all the way to Christmas, maybe the World Series, you know, on Christmas Eve or something. I don't know, Christmas Day. Maybe they can take over Christmas Day.
Well, there's 162 is out of the realm. But you brought up an interesting one, the 7-inning. You could get more doubleheaders in there that way and therefore more games. But, Darren, I think you've coached enough youth games to know that, you know, that the number of innings a game is makes a big difference, right? Even on your level that you're coaching your son. I've seen it at my son's level. There's time limits on games. So some games are scheduled for, you know, for 6 innings, say, and they only go 4 innings because of time. I mean, it's a gigantic difference in how many pitches are thrown, how many pitchers you use. And so a 7-inning major league game, that would change the strategy fundamentally in the game as opposed to 9. Imagine the bullpens and the middle relief and the strategy there. And I guess the idea would be to take some of the heat off of the pitching staffs so that they wouldn't have to throw as many innings. That makes a lot of sense for sure. But the fundamental strategy of the game would change a lot. I don't know if that's worth it. Just go ahead and play 9 if you're going to play a doubleheader.
Yeah, I think you need to do that. And realistically speaking, I guess you could do Saturday and Sunday doubleheaders. I mean, you might have to tweak the rosters and, you know, do something like that. But I think that you could probably pull that off and just schedule it that way, but you're still not getting 162.
Mm-mm. I've even seen them throwing. I know they're just tossing stuff around and it's getting out there publicly. My guess is they kind of want to hear what is the reaction of people. You know, it's kind of they float things out there just to see what's the reaction. And that's okay. I mean, in this time when we're trying to talk for 4 hours a day, floating things out there isn't a horrible idea. It gives us something to talk about. But
yeah, we never do that.
No, not on Sports Talk Radio. But playing games at neutral sites, you know, if you have to go deep into, if you have to go into bad weather. So then you would move, you know, playoff games for Major League Baseball. Like, that one to me makes, like, the seven, I'm against the seven inning doubleheaders, but I would probably say yes to that well before I would say yes to neutral site, you know, playoff games.
Yeah, no.
I'm going to say that one's a no. And can you make that work?
Probably.
By the way, I'm throwing this out there.
If you go into November, maybe say deep into November, and you were trying to wrap up by Thanksgiving time, I think they would be really worried about, let's say, if Cleveland made it or Boston or New York, just playing any kind of postseason game past a certain date in November, you're really running a risk. And so that, I think that's where that's coming from, right? Moving it down to an area, or at least in a dome where you could play.
97, I sat in a blizzard in Indians Marlins at Jacobs Field.
Oh, I know.
It was a blizzard. And Colorado, when the Rockies made their magical run to the World Series, remember?
Absolutely.
They had tons of snow. I mean,
oh, yeah.
We've already had that.
You could have it in October. Yeah, you could have it in October, right? You could have it in September, theoretically, in some of these cities. But I think that's where that is maybe born out of, is if you had to play way into November, where even more and more cities, I mean, you're rolling the dice just to get a day where it's playable. I mean, maybe it's worth a thought. I don't know. I don't know how many people would go to a neutral site game.
That's literally what I was going to bring up.
Like, what if you had four teams?
If the Yankees and the Twins played, okay, because they both have their cold places and they're outdoors, if they played that game in Tampa, because the Yankees facility is down there, so their home games are down in Tampa, do they sell it out? I don't know.
And I'd already have a problem with that, just because of the, you know, traditionalists. I mean, Yankee, I know it's not the same Yankee Stadium, but playoffs at Yankee Stadium, I mean, that, to me, you just don't mess with that. That right there already, you know, squashes it for me. I mean, I get the whole weather thing, but I don't like that.
Difficult either. Decisions that they're going to have to make. The other question is, would fans be allowed to go? You would certainly hope by that time that we would be in the clear for that, but I don't know if it's a guarantee.
Think about this too, Darren. You know, you and I are supposed to go down to Truist Park, SunTrust Park, and go to a concert that's scheduled for, I believe it's
August.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would think that things are good by then, but what happens if baseball is like, hey, we got to take all the dates? I mean, we got to – I mean, could that be – you know, could that concert, could those shows be affected that are scheduled in baseball stadiums? I think that's another thing you have to look at as they try and get as many games in as possible.
Well, I don't know, because obviously the Braves would have been scheduled to be out on the road, so I don't know how that would change them all of a sudden being at
home. What I'm saying is they may have to change the schedule. It just depends on how many games they're going to lose or what they're going to try and do. I mean, I would think they're going to try their best to keep the home dates and the as is for teams, but they may not have that luxury. They may have to revamp some things. I don't think we really know is what I'm saying.
I wouldn't want that job. I can tell you that. Trying to reschedule or figure this out. We come back. Kermit Davis, former longtime MTSU basketball coach, now at Ole Miss. We're going to catch up with Kermit as we will be going into the Sweet 16 tonight of the NCAA tournament. Sad on that. We would be finding out after this weekend who would be our Final Four. We'll talk to Kermit on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Darren McFarland, that's me, down here on the south side of town in Rutherford County. Willie Donick on the east side in East Nashville. Chase McCabe over on the west side in Bellevue. Elijah Campbell back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. A good friend of the show, a guy we've always enjoyed our conversations with over the years, longtime MTSU men's basketball coach, now the head coach at Ole Miss. Kermit Davis is on the line with us. Kermit, how you doing? Good morning.
Darren, I'm doing good. Just at the house and about to drive my wife and my daughter crazy. So I'm trying to stay using social distances from my wife. That's true. So she's going to kick me out, I think.
We're all going to find out how strong our family bonds are, aren't we, during this?
It What it's going to do is going to push back all of our retirements a few more years. I promise you that.
That is a good point. Before we get into some of this, I did want to let you know we are going to unveil on this show on Monday. We have put together, because tonight would be the start of the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament, and come Monday's show, we would have been talking about who's in the Final Four. But we've got our Nashville sports bracket, the best Nashville athletes in the last 30 years. So we've comprised our brackets and 64 athletes here in Middle Tennessee. And one of your players, I'll just leave it at that, we haven't let the cat out of the bag yet, but one of your players from, you know, those two special years you had at MTSU is indeed in the field. What do you remember about that? And, I mean, just that incredible ride. And to follow that up, Kermit, with the next year of getting that win again when you guys beat Minnesota and then face Butler. But to get to the second round 2 years in a row, what was that ride like?
Yeah, it was, you know, it's funny how we get a lot of idle time and you go back and you watch, you know, tape of this year's team, even last year's team. And then I watched two or three games of over the last couple of weeks of our teams in middle, just trying to see, you know, what were some of the things that stood out, maybe some things that I can take away, I can do better to try to, you know, kind of resemble that team. And, you know, the second year, because I didn't really ever remember this stat. There's only four teams in the history of the NCAA tournament that were ever, you know, seeds that were 12 or higher that won back-to-back games, you know, back-to-back years. Mm-hmm. And we were one of them. And so I think that, you know, the Michigan State thing was an unbelievable feeling. But the next year the team had a lot of expectations, was picked almost favored in every game, and just to go do it, you know, and win whatever, 30 or 31 games, you know, and then back it up and play like we did in the NCAA tournament. And then we played really good against Butler. Giddey, who had an unbelievable career, one of my favorite players, and he was 0 for that night, just one of those nights. He didn't make a bucket, and it's still kind of a one-possession game. But I guess, Darren, the biggest thing, I was so happy for our players. I'm so happy for the fans that were associated with MTSU.
You may have just let the cat out of the bag on that player. But, hey, and everybody remembers, right? I mean, that team, I think what was interesting is, you know, we talked about this when the Predators made, ironically, their magical run in 2017, too. And this is interesting that your two runs were 2016 and 2017, but the magical run to the Stanley Cup Final, and then what it's like coming back with those huge expectations. You're no longer going to sneak up on anybody. Everybody's targeted. You had to follow up with what I said about the following year, right? We talked about this with you. You guys were the sexy upset pick. I mean, everybody was picking middle. Like, nobody was picking you against Michigan State, but the following year, everybody's picking the Blue Raiders over Minnesota. What that was like to have everybody, now they're putting real pressure on you to be the upset team.
Yeah, that was, to me, that's what we had worked so hard to be able to do, Darren. I mean, like, I think you take every job trying to create expectations. And I think that was the thing that it takes time. You know, I hope we're the same way here, that, you know, you create a brand that there's just so high expectations. It wasn't even on our team this year. That's kind of what we did. And that was fine. I embraced that. And I thought that was cool for Middle Tennessee people to kind of have their chest out, and that they thought that our team was good. They had a lot of respect for our program, starting to gain it nationally. That's what we're working so hard to try to attain.
Kermit Davis on the line with us. Obviously, this season did not go the way as planned that you wanted it to at Ole Miss. It was following up a great first season. Let me ask you about Wednesday night, because we had Joe Fisher on a couple days ago, because Vanderbilt played right after you guys against Arkansas, and so that was the last basketball game that we saw in this town, and it was one of the last college basketball games of the year. But you guys had the first game to tip off the SEC tournament against Georgia. What was that atmosphere like? What was that like when you're hearing things and things are swirling about, you know, how this was going to play out?
Well, we have an unbelievable commissioner and a great office. The only thing I was disappointed in, Darren, they didn't call that dang tournament off the day before, put us out of our misery. So I wish they had done that. That would have been a little bit better for the Rebels. But, you know, you walk in in the practice session, and you could tell, you know, I talked to Commissioner Sankey and Dan Leibowitz, and there was just different looks on everybody. I mean, just you know, you could tell they were going through some really, really hard decisions, you know, and it was different. It was just kind of eerie a little bit, you know. And our players didn't really sense it. You know, players just want to play. But I could just tell that there were anxious moments, and you could see that they didn't say much, but they knew it was different times. And, you know, they were talking about that time. They let fans come in that first night, you know, and then they were going to go second night, you know, with no fans, it seemed like. And I could just tell that it was an uneasy feeling. And, you know, it's just a different state. It doesn't matter if I talk to basketball coaches or you guys or wherever it is. Everybody's just in a place that we've never been before. So it was sad. And I know how sad it was for – we weren't going to the tournament. Obviously, we'd gotten beat. But if I'd had one of those Middle Tennessee teams that couldn't go, God, you'd have felt so bad for your players.
Talking to Kermit Davis, head coach of Ole Miss. And, Coach, we were reminiscing. Earlier this week we had my coach, Eddie Fogler, on. And it dawns on me, you know, when they showed the games last week, the 82 and 83 finals, I'm looking at your timeline. This is back when you were ending your playing career and then starting your coaching career. So you know that era very, very well. I'm curious, did you get a chance to see either one of those games, parts of those games when they put them on?
I did not. I didn't. I was a senior at Mississippi State in 82, and then I was out of the GA at State from 82 to 84, but I didn't really. What games were they?
Well, it was the 82 final. Michael Jordan as a freshman with James Worthy playing up against Patrick Ewing and Georgetown when Patrick Ewing was a freshman. And then the next year was the Phi Slam Pajama, losing to Jimmy V's underdogs, NC State. But one of the things we talked about in both of those games was just how different the game flow is. You got an amazing amount of talent on the floor. That jumps out at you. But no three-point line, no shot clock, but still no shortage of action. And we've talked to you about these kind of things before, how the game evolves. But what do you remember about that era? Because it was just amazing to see, number one, teams that had juniors and seniors on the floor that had played together a lot. They had a lot of different defenses that they threw at you. It was really entertaining to watch.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing, even with the shot clock back then, with no shot clock, you know. And I'm telling you, my college coach, Bob Boyd, God rest his soul, I've learned so much from Coach. He was one of the guys, I'm telling you, that wanted the shot clock came in, because we just hold the ball. We just hold it. I mean, we did it at Vanderbilt one night when CM was the coach. And I think we held it for the last 8 minutes of the game. And Vanderbilt's up one, and I think we took one in to win. It was like 37-38. And so, but to see, like you said, like you watched the Fox Slam the Jamma, I was playing at Mississippi State. We went to this Kettle Classic in Houston, and that's when they had them all right there. And Olajuwon was a freshman.
Right.
And, you know, Willie, you're a better player than me. I wasn't very good, but I was getting in late. They were just beating the heck out of us. And Olajuwon was came the freshman. He was kind of checking in the same time I was. And I was sitting there, and they put him in the game. It was early, and people just kind of finding out who he was. And they threw it to him at the top of the key, and he took like four steps. And he dunked the ball on the play. They were calling him, walking on him, but the place was going crazy, and he didn't really know what he was doing. And it was just amazing to watch that team. Then that guy would have been going after a year. You know, just watch, like you said, just watch the veteran teams evolve, you know. And but I was at the semifinal game in New Orleans. I wasn't at the championship game, but I watched the semifinal games, the Superdome. I think I was at the second row from the top. You know, but it was fun to watch it, and great players. And you know what? Those teams right now, they would be favored. All those teams would be favored to win the national championship because of all the guys coming back.
Wow, and that was the case. That North Carolina team had a lot of those same guys. They had Worthy left, but they had Perkins and Jordan coming back, plus all the other McDonald's All-Americans that they would come in every year with. It was an amazing era of college basketball. So, Coach, do you ever think, because this is one thing we were debating, the three-point line we know is here to stay. It's a great thing for college basketball. But do you think the 30-second shot clock takes away a little bit of that variety that we were talking about, where you could change defenses, you could press to increase tempo, you could hold it a little bit more to take away tempo? Let's say the happy medium of the 45-second shot clock, which is what it evolved in. So you can't hold it like your Mississippi State teams did back in the day, but you could be a little bit more patient.
Yeah, you could. You still see upsets, though. You know, really, it's a great point. It's a great argument. You know, I remember when the 45-second clock came, and I was assistant at Idaho in the mid-'80s, and I remember when it came about, and we thought it was going to just be terrible for basketball. And then now 45 seconds would just seem like a lifetime. I really like the 30 seconds. I think it gives you enough time. You can still dictate some tempo. I'd give anything in the world if we could get some kind of shot clock in high school basketball. Got to watch some of these games, and you know, and coaches just kind of trying to hold balls the last 2 or 2.5 minutes, and I wish that would evolve. I think it would help it. But I'm a promoter of the 30-second shot clock. I really don't want it to go to 24. But I do remember the times when, like you said, you could really dictate it, whether it was Dean Smith doing it way, way early with the four corners or even Coach Boyd doing it at Mississippi State.
Kermit Davis is with us, longtime MTSU basketball coach, now, of course, with Ole Miss. And, Kermit, you know, one thing that I kind of enjoyed about this year in basketball is there wasn't necessarily one team that was running away with it. You had some that were there at the top, but it looked like it was going to be a wide-open tournament. Is that, in your mind, as a coach, good for the game when you have a little more variety with these teams and it's a little more of an even playing field?
I think it is. I mean, we could have had Dayton, and that's as good a basketball town as there is in our country. I mean, loyal fans, even during some of their hard years, those kids is 12,700 every night there at that Dayton Arena. And just to see that team could be a one seed, San Diego State, maybe been a two. But both those teams could have been Final Four teams. I think it makes it for great spectators. I know that the Blue Bloods being good kind of drives interest up in college basketball. You know, I get that. And I think it's like in our league. Sometimes our league is judged by how good Kentucky is. And if Kentucky maybe, and they've been great for a lot of years, but when they're really good, maybe our league is judged a little bit different, you know. And so I just think it's what you're fixing to see, though. I really do. And even in the next couple, 2 or 3 years, if they do let maybe the best high school players go right to the NBA, then you're really, really going to see a reset, and it's going to get real even.
What are some things that you were able to learn in year two with Ole Miss? I know, as we talked about earlier, didn't go exactly as planned, but what were some takeaways from this season?
Yeah, you know, you reflect back, and I love that our Ole Miss fan, we broke the record for season tickets. There was a lot of high expectations, which is great. Our fans really clung right in there with us, and then that was great. And I think that they still appreciate how we play. You just look back on whether it's the really good teams at Middle Tennessee or whatever, and we just, you know, we beat some people, handled it, but we won some close games. And this year, guys, we're about 5 possessions away from having the same exact year we had the year before, whether we're up 19 at home against Auburn, get beat. 11 at home against Arkansas, second half, get beat. 10 at home against LSU, second half, get beat. At Kentucky, up one with the ball, last minute and a half, get beat. I mean, so that's just why some of our teams like us, we had the year we did. We couldn't close out games, and that's just something that we've got to do better. But I was really, like I said, we've got everybody back except for Tyree, you know, so we've got some experience coming back, and we've got to add a couple guys. And, you know, so I still like where we are, but I think it's just closing out games and really, really good teams find a way to do that.
How about athletics as a whole there at Ole Miss? As you will enter year three, but Lane Kiffin comes aboard to coach football. It seems like things are really growing there in Oxford.
It is. You know, our baseball team had won 16 games in a row. They were about to get ranked number one in the country until they had to shut down and cancel the spring sports. Obviously, Lane has created such a buzz with our fan base, and people are so excited about that. Our home football schedule is unbelievable. Hard, but exciting for fans, not the head coach, but exciting for the fans. And then, you know, basketball is in a good place. We got to keep going. But, you know, like every town, guys, I mean, Oxford is hurting right now. You know, I mean, it's hurting. When the Graduate Hotel and Luke Chamblee, one of my best friends who put ownership in it, they shut the doors at the Graduate, you know, and because of just the hotel business. And you feel for the you know, these unique, great places on the square. They're struggling right now, you know. So I'm sure it's the same thing in Nashville. So, you know, we just need, you know, to get through what we're going through right now, and hopefully we can find some, you know, some sun at the end of that tunnel, and
and get back. And I really, really hope, guys, that the NFL will play. I hope we get college football going in the fall. I know that's the hot topic in everybody's campuses right now.
No doubt. Are you at least getting out on the links at all? Are you hitting the golf ball around, or what are you doing? You just staying at home?
One time, I'm sitting there, I'm looking, I'm outside, and I'm looking at the second green on the Oxford Country Club. It's a beautiful day. All these cats are playing, you know, and so, but I got to get a couple of players. I get out here, and I've gotten into is fishing. I love bass fishing, so I got some lakes on this course, and kind of late in the evening, I'll go out and kind of do that a little bit, and but I'll get out there on the golf course. This course is tight, and it's hilly, so it's not very forgiving. I can't go chasing around. And my tee ball is kind of left and right now, so I got to get a lesson from my golf coach if I can get it better.
Kermit, we miss you in these parts, but we're happy for you. Keep up the good work down in Oxford, and be safe, and don't drive your family too crazy.
I appreciate it, guys. Great to be with you all. The same thing. You guys stay safe and well there.
All right, thank you, Kermit. Kermit Davis, Ole Miss basketball coach, longtime MTSU basketball coach, and I kind of let the cat out of the bag. We are indeed going to release a bracket on Monday's show, and one of his players indeed is going to make that bracket well-deserved. We'll come back more of Darren Donick and Chase on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Special thanks again to Kermit Davis, Ole Miss basketball coach. Ironically, their season, nothing really would have changed on their end. They got beat up by Georgia, and he even kidded with us and said, kind of wish Greg Sankey would have called the tournament on Wednesday night just to put them out of their misery. It was not a good showing against Georgia and unfortunately not a good season for them, but hopefully they will bounce back and have a better year next year. But kind of going back to that MTSU, those 2 years, the magical run, I mean, I think what's impressive about the 2016 game was, you know, just the Michigan State. They led wire to wire. What was that, a 2 and a 15? They were a 15, and Michigan State was a 2, and they led wire to wire. I think that, to me, is what's more impressive than anything. They hung 90 on the Spartans and never trailed.
Well, if you look, since there's been 64 teams, there's only been, what, still only maybe 5 15s that have won and 1 16? So you just think about how rare that
eight.
Is.
I think there's been eight 15 seeds win.
Okay.
And we've seen
some
of those.
That's about right.
Like in recent history, right? I mean,
I think with every passing year, for the reasons he talked about, guys, that wouldn't you say that there's less difference between the 2 and the 15 than there used to be because of what we're talking about? You don't have the top teams that are stacked with not just talent, but talent that's been together for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much the gap has really changed over the years. I mean, we still get a lot of blowouts with 15-2, but I don't know. It's a good question. I'd like to know, has the gap – I mean, we know the gap has changed. The gap is a lot closer because the 16 finally beat a 1, so we know the gap. And we said it was eventually going to happen. With college
well, it's
basketball.
Like you said with Middle Tennessee, though. With that team was a 15, but that team was pretty good. I mean, that team was not overmatched, I think, as much as maybe some 15s over the years have been. Right there's sometimes where you start watching a 15, you're saying, why in the world is this team a 15? There are some 15s where you're like, whoa, these guys are true underdogs. I didn't feel that way about that Middle game. When you watched it from start to finish, and I think we had watched them all year long, I think we remember them being a little bit upset about being a 15.
Yeah, and I think that happens. I mean, you're seeing that more and more, like you guys were saying, that, you know, you might seed a team in a smaller conference, you know, in a 15 or something like that, but they play much higher, and that's what we want. I think as fans, that's what you want in the NCAA tournament, that you want to have some of those upsets. Now, there are going to be times where if you have a Duke team or a Kentucky team, one of the blue bloods that is expected to do well, you probably want to see that too. But I think that's where it's so difficult to seed some of these teams, and sometimes they get it right, sometimes they don't.
I guess right. It is indeed 8, so I looked it up. 8 and 132 all time is 2 versus 15, or 15 versus 2, I should say. And Middle was the last 15 seed to win. in that upset victory we're just talking about over Michigan State. The team before that was in 2013. This team
beat
did
Duke.
It against Georgetown.
Oh, Georgetown.
Mm-hmm. Which surprised me. Georgetown was a 2 seed in 2013.
What?
I know.
I don't remember that.
I don't either. You'll remember the team, but I just didn't remember it. I just didn't realize that Georgetown was a 2 seed. It's actually a team that's in a conference with a local team here.
Really?
Florida
yep.
Gulf Coast.
Yep. They battle Lipscomb every year. I didn't want to say that because that would give it away. Florida Gulf Coast.
That was the team that they won a second game, too, right? They won two.
Yes,
they got
I believe
Sweet
that's
16.
Right. Uh-huh. I think that's right. And
well, actually, what did they call themselves? Dunk City, or what was the they had a knack. They just played so well for two games, and that was the guy Andy Neufeld, who's now the coach
at USC.
At USC, it got him that job.
It did. It certainly did. Yeah, they did. They definitely made that magical run. And what is it? What are they called, Elijah?
Florida Gulf Coast.
Yeah, what is it? Willie's right. They're Dunk.
Oh, they were Dunk City, yeah.
Is it Dunk City?
Mm-hmm. And they're the only 15 seed to have won their second round game. So out of those eight that won against 2 seeds, they're the only ones to advance to the Sweet 16.
Interesting. Wow.
Beat San Diego State. I think that was one of the last Steve Fisher coached teams at SDSU.
Okay. Well, in 2012, guys, it happened twice. So, yeah, most of these have happened recently. So that should answer your question, Willie, that
Is 2012 when is 2012 when Duke lost to I want to say
Lehigh.
Yeah.
Yep. Lehigh. Cuz
I knew Duke was one of them.
Uh-huh. And then there was another one that same tournament.
That's
SEC
right.
team went down, a 2 seed in the SEC.
Mizzou. Norfolk State.
Yep. Missouri went down to Norfolk
That's
State.
That's right. Norfolk
were
State.
They,
I remember watching
in the SEC.
That was
then?
Going on while we were on the air.
Yeah, I remember
that. Yes, it did while we were on there. That's exactly right.
Okay, you guys may because Austin Huff, we know Austin Huff was working with us. He's a
Missouri
Mizzou alumni, and I remember the look of just absolute heartache on his face. And were they in the SEC, or was that one of the last years in the ACC? Or Big 12?
No, they were here. They were in the SEC.
Okay, I couldn't remember when they joined. I thought it was around that time.
2001 was Hampton over Iowa State. I think we all remember
Hampton.
That
Hampton. I remember that. Remember Hampton had the coach that was 5 foot nothing. I can't remember. And they carried him off the court.
Yep.
And he was kicking his legs out. I remember that game for sure. And then the one didn't Steve Nash and there was just the anniversary of this. Steve Nash and Clara. His legs is one of them. I remember.
Oh.
Santa Clara, well, Willie's breaking up big time. Santa Clara in Arizona was 1993. The first one to ever happen was Richmond and Syracuse in 91. And then the other one, unfortunately, was our guest on Monday. We just brought him up with Kermit Davis in 1997, Coppin State versus South Carolina. And that was an Eddie Fogler South Carolina team in 1997. So... yeah, there you go. There's 8 times it's happened.
Wow.
We will come back and wrap up the first hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. We do that next. Saints quarterback Drew Brees has announced a $5 million donation to the state of Louisiana. We've talked about this week, a lot of athletes stepping up big time and helping out. A lot of people are out of work, and Drew Brees is just yet again another athlete to step up big time and donate $5 million to help out the state of Louisiana. So really cool. I mean, Drew Brees, you know, he is going to be forever remembered as a member. That's why nobody could, you know, him signing back, everybody knew that was going to happen. Nobody's ever going to see him in another uniform, and it's weird to know that we're always going to remember him nothing but the New Orleans Saints, but, you know, there was a career before Charges. New Orleans, but nobody's ever going to remember it.
No, the only time you'll remember it is when you go and you look up a player that's in the Hall of Fame and they're listed, you know, listed there, and it has the teams they played for, and you'll see that lightning bolt and go, when did he play for the Chargers?
Yep.
Because that's exactly what – it'll be like Randy Moss. When did he play for the Titans?
That's right.
That'll pop up. But
I've got the updated – we didn't get a chance to get to this yesterday. I threw this out there that we were, but we ran out of time. I've got the current cap space of every team with all the moves up to this point.
Oh,
okay.
Cool.
So you guys tell me who you think currently has the most money to play with right now in cap space.
The most money to play with. Willie, do you have a guess? Do we even have Willie? Is Willie here?
I have no idea, honestly.
Okay. Yeah, I don't. I'll probably. I will go.
Well, you're mentioning it for a reason, so let's just throw out the Titans.
Oh, it's not really for a reason.
I don't think it's the Titans.
It's not really for a reason. They are. We're going to get to that, but they are. It's just to kind of let you know who's got the most, and then kind of where the Titans fit into that category. The Browns actually have the most. They have $47 million in available cap space.
I was going to say them, and then I talked myself out of it because they've been busy.
No, they have
been
busy.
So that's impressive.
The Jets have $37 million. They're second.
Arizona, are they in there?
Redskins have $36 million. They're third. Texans have $33 million. They're fourth. The Lions have $30 million. They're fifth. So there's your top five. Browns, Jets, Redskins, Texans, Lions. Now it gets interesting in the next five. Six in the Titans division, the Colts, $28 million. Eagles, $27 million. Dolphins, $26.5 million. Titans, $26.3 million. Chargers, $23 million. So that's your top 10. And if you've noticed, that is a lot in the AFC.
Is that counting the Beasley signing? Because I don't think they've officially announced that yet because of physicals and things like that. It sounds like it would
just
be
said ahead. It's up to date.
Okay.
As of this says last updated on 3/25/20.
Right. It sounds
that
like
would
it would
yesterday.
Be included in there, but I know that, you know, there's some signings that we all know about that haven't been officially announced because they haven't had the official physical because they can't because of all this going on.
Well, my guess is since we've already seen the numbers and we know how much it's for, then they've counted it.
Yeah, it sounds like it's counted.
If the numbers have been revealed, they've counted it. So the Titans are in good shape. Ironically, the Chiefs are last. The Patriots are second to last. Those are the two worst teams. They have got virtually nothing to play with. Chiefs, $300,000 under the cap. Patriots, $2 million. Under the cap.
Well, that makes more sense because they've got most of their team that they want. The intriguing one to me that you threw out there, Darren, is the Patriots. I would think they're a team in transition that would have some flexibility, especially with their quarterback situation, but that's got to hamper them some, right?
I know. How about that? I mean, think about the moves they've made. They cut Steven Gostkowski, their most, you know, productive kicker in the league for last, what, he's been with them last 14 years? They cut their kicker. Tom Brady, as you mentioned, has left. And who else am I missing? They lost Van Noy to the Dolphins. I mean, and they got $2 million to work with?
Yeah, wow.
That's surprising.
That screams at you, time to rebuild.
Yes, it does. Hence why they haven't, I guess – well, they haven't signed, you know, like a Jameis Winston or a Cam Newton or one of those guys.
Wouldn't it be such a Belichick thing to do to basically to go into what Willie's saying and rebuild and end up with the first overall pick and get Lawrence? That'd be just wrong, but hilarious at the same time.
Hey, would it be crazy for them to be thinking like that?
No, no, not at all. Not at all.
I guess what I'm trying to figure out is how are they that far? I mean, who's taking up all their money? How are they that bad off?
Well, they still have some really good players, I think, right? I mean, yeah, I think they must still have a lot of money invested in some. They had the best defense in the league last year. They didn't lose everybody.
I mean, Gilmore, I know, counts for a lot, but I mean, it's not like they've got, you know, they don't have a Gronkowski contract. I mean, they don't have. What are their?
All right, so this is what they have. You mentioned Gilmore, so he's up there.
Who's their big ticket? Is McCourty?
No, they just re-signed him. Is it Thuney, their guard? He's making north of $14 million.
Ooh, okay.
You have Dante Hightower that's making a little above 12. I mean, Gilmore's making 18. So that's a big chunk. And then you got Edelman, close to 10. Marcus Cannon, the tackle, close to 10. Shaq Mason, Mohamed Sanu making 6.5, so that all adds up.
Mohamed Sanu,
yeah, that's not he's going to get cut. I mean, they have to make moves, right?
I would think.
How are you going to do
that team needs to make moves.
They plan
moves.
To sign another quarterback.
Right, that's what I'm getting at. So there's got to be more moves coming from the Patriots.
I mean, Jason McCourty could be one of those guys. He's making 5.5.
Yeah. What's Devin make?
Well, they just re-signed Devin, I think. Where's Devin?
5.4.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
And so the dead cap for Jason would be 175. So they could do that. Mohamed Sanu, it doesn't look like there would be a dead cap hit at all, according to Spotrac.
I don't see how they could keep a guy like Sanu at 6.5.
Sure.
I mean, they're going to have to
You have to have like $6 to $8 million for your draft class. So
if Thish thought I would pass that along, Jags, by the way, were 15th. And let's see, that was the worst of the division, right? So how about that? So you've got the Colts have $28 million. They're currently the sixth best team with cap space. Titans were 9th. Jags were 15th. Where were the Texans? Did I say? Oh, the Texans were 4th. They had $33 million. So you have the Titans division in really good shape. 4, 6, 9, and 15. Actually, the Jags. How about that? All the moves. It's because of all that dead money.
Yeah, the Jags, man.
That's what they're. I mean, honestly, that's what their deal is. There's a lot of dead money in there. That's what's hampering them. But that's the worst team in the division. Is 15th overall.
And they're probably going to be the worst team in the division
again.
Period.
Yeah, again. So far, guys, it looks like all the guesses. Here's my hint. Seems like I've thrown you guys a curveball.
Nah, I just saw one.
My guess is not right.
Nope. Your guess has been the most popular guess. By the way, nice. Just got a Corey Hart guess. That's excellent. Excellent.
Guys, we got
okay,
a little
I know
news.
My next guess. I'm gonna tweet my next guess, Darren, just so we don't give it away on the air, so you don't have to answer.
Okay.
Who it is, but so be on the lookout. I have my next guess in mind. But you're saying there has not been a correct guess yet?
There's been one person that snuck in the correct guess. One person. There's been a whole lot of misses.
Mine's probably wrong then.
Whole lot of misses. What do you got, Chase? What's the Vandy news? And then we'll come back with Kurt Casale.
Aaron Nesmith declares for the draft.
Yeah.
Not surprising.
No.
Not surprising.
Not surprising at all, but it is. That's from the official desk?
It is. Just saw Joe Rexroad tweet that and a few others.
So. Okay. We will come back. Kurt Casale, Cincinnati Reds catcher, to kick off the second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games that's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.